hearts as nothing else can. And when Abdul-Jamar's children die, he will know also that he has paid a terrible price for his betrayal. It will be a great moment for us and those who will help us. America will tremble in response, knowing that no one, not even their children, are safe from the force of our power.
Heads nodded slightly in response to the words as the leader looked from one to the next. He gestured to the man standing beside him, and the soldier unrolled a large square of Tyvek and placed it on the table. The leader stood, the others moving closer to look at the map that had been spread out before them. It was a chart with symbols and areas unknown to them. The leader leaned in and pointed to a section that displayed thick intersecting black lines on an accented area that indicated it was a place of heavy population. Many blue and red roads crisscrossed one another as they stretched from west to east, moving along a narrow strip of land bordered by bodies of water.
"This is the great capital of New York City. We will not strike there where so many expect targets to be located."
His long, dark index finger moved eastward, following the patterns of the roads.
"Instead, our objective is to the east, where those who work in this great American city live with their families and believe they are safe. This is also the location of Abdul-Jamar's family. He is seldom there, but that is of no consequence. It is his children we are after, and they live here on what is called Long Island."
His finger stopped on a large round dot approximately a third of the way along the middle of the narrow landmass.
"This is the place where all three of Abdul-Jamar's beautiful daughters attend school. Central High School, it is called. Here is where we will strike."
1. The Phantom Strikes Again.
"Mr. Scarlucci, I have a deposit in my drawers."
Not really listening, I glanced up distractedly from the computer screen of my laptop, my attention still on the lockdown protocol during building emergency staff memo I was drafting in accordance with the New York State mandate.
"Mr. Scarlucci!"
the voice insisted loudly. I glanced up. The business teacher standing in my office doorway was elderly, stout, wide-hipped, and perpetually angry, probably about being elderly, stout, and wide-hipped. "I'll be with you in a moment, Blanche," I said.
"Mr. Scarlucci, I said there is a deposit in my drawers."
"Okay, what?" Blanche Turner stepped into my assistant principal's office, moving toward where I sat behind my large mahogany desk. She pushed a loose strand of her graying, not overly clean, wavy hair from her furrowed brow, and her voice dropped to a hushed, conspiratorial level.
"I said there are feces in my drawers."
"Feces?"
"Yes, shit! I have shit in my drawers. I came in this morning, opened the center desk drawer to get my plastic pass, which I always keep at the blackboard because I refuse to stop the lesson for bathroom requests. And there it was, in the front tray."
Great. The Phantom, as we had come to call him, had struck again, this time making Blanche Turner the target. For years, everyone, including myself, had been urging Blanche to retire. But Blanche was and always had been single, and teaching always had been and still was her entire life. So, in spite of everyone except her knowing that her classroom atmosphere was always somewhere between rude and chaotic, she was tenured and still here. And now she had shit in her drawers. "I'll see that it gets cleaned up, Blanche. I'm sorry."
"Well, how in God's name could anyone do such a thing? There's no excuse for it. It's just mean, that's all. Just mean."
"Yes, it is. I'm afraid the good old gold..."